And I know that it's kind of a very, very sad evening in light of the tragedies that happened this morning, and all of us pray that the families that were bereaved should be comforted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that v'chlal we should have shalom and bracha in Eretz Yisrael and throughout the world. And once again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us tzaros, which there's no real way that we have the koach to prevent. And hopefully through our tshuva and our matzim tovim and our avas Yisrael and our commitment to serve Hashem, we will be zochet to great, great rachamim. And all of our learning, specifically tonight, should be dedicated to that particular cause. Paradoxically, the topic that we're talking about tonight is the mitzvah of kibud avim, honoring parents. And this is one of the few mitzvahs where the Torah actually promises us, l'man yarichun yamecha, that this mitzvah can give arichus yamim. And even though it is true that in a physical sense it gives arichus yamim, even that is not a guarantee. If you remember the famous heretic Elisha ben Avuya, who is a great Talmud Chacham, initially part of what took him off the path of Hashem was he had seen a child climb up on a tree at the command of his father to chase away the bird to take the eggs, and that's Shiluach HaKein, and he fell off the tree and he died. And Elisha ben Avuya said, there are two commandments where the Torah gives you arichus yamim. One is kibud avim and the other is Shiluach HaKein. Here you have a kid who's doing both and he dies. It's got to be the Torah's fault. But the Gemara says his mistake was that ultimately, even for these mitzvahs, the real reward is Olam Haba. But in the normal course of events, there is Arichus Yamim in Olam Hazeh as well. And Baruch Hashem, because by and large, we live in a society where people are living longer than they used to. What did they say? 70 is the new 50 or whatever it is. Baruch Hashem, we do live in a Tekufa Arichus Yamim. But this does create, you know, new and difficult questions about dealing with elderly parents who become unable to function. Sometimes there is dementia, there are going to be other issues, home care versus nursing care, nursing home care, and the like. And the question is, how do the laws of kibud avim apply? So one reason why kibud avim is difficult now is because people are living longer. And of course, a second reason is families are much more dispersed geographically. It used to be in Europe for hundreds of years, you'd have, you know, children, grandchildren, everyone's living in the same place. Now everybody's all over the place. How do you fulfill these mitzvahs in the Skype generation, especially if the older person doesn't use Skype? You know, how does that work? A third complication is the issue of what you might call the blended or composite family. Because now it's not just father and mother, it's step-parents, second marriages, you know, maybe third marriages, whatever it is. You have issues of conversion, issues of adoption. Now, these things always existed, but numerically, they are more prevalent than they were. So how do these commandments apply to all of these different relationships? How do they apply to and the like? So we're going to do a relatively quick survey of the basic halachic questions that arise in this very, very important area. Suffice it to say that kibud avim, just as much as basar b'chalav or hilchos Shabbos, one does need the guidance of a rav or a posek, because these are really very, very difficult questions. On the other hand, let me say too that although halachically there are many ins and outs, there's also a strong measure of common sense and common decency that you have to bring. Meaning to say that if your conscience bothers you vis-a-vis how you're behaving towards a certain parent, it probably is wrong. In other words, I mean, your conscience is right and the behavior is probably wrong. Meaning, one needs to have a sense of basic morality here. A kibud avim is not always a mitzvah that is quantified by specific rules, although there are many specific rules. Sometimes you just have to have a sense of what is the right thing to do. The Chazon Ish called that the fifth chelek of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch has four volumes of rules, but there's a fifth chelek that's common sense and morality that a person needs to bring to this area. Okay, so first, let me give you some basic information that I'm sure most of you have learned over the years. That is, the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em appears in the Aseres HaDibros twice, both in Parshas Yisro and in Parshas V'Eschanan, right, because the Aseres HaDibros, but in addition, it appears in Parshas Kedoshim. And in the Ten Commandments, it is a mitzvah that is called Kabeid Es Avicha V'Esimecha, to honor your parents, give them kavod, the fifth commandment. In Parshas Kedoshim, it is Ish Imo V'Aviv Tiro, to have reverence and awe of your parents. So there's kavod, and there is mora. And in fact, the Gemara in Kedushin tells us that kavod and mora, although they overlap, do refer to two distinct concepts. Kavod is the affirmative way that you show your parents homage, for example, giving them food and drink, serving them, dressing them if they need to be dressed, taking them places where they need to go, taking them in and out. So kavod we would associate with affirmative activities that show that you care about your parents. Now again, that show love, although we will see there is no direct commandment to love your parents, but kavod are activities that generally demonstrate love and esteem. Mora, fear or reverence, is more of the negative. Certain things that you don't do because they show a lack of respect. You don't sit in your parents' designated place. When parents come in, you would rise for them. I'll discuss why this is commonly not done today, but that doesn't mean it shouldn't be done, but it commonly is not done. You don't call your, right, in the 60s, there used to be this thing about calling your parents by their first name. Hey, George, you know, I don't like what you and Wilmer are doing, whatever it would be. One is not allowed to refer to their parents by a name. Now, if somebody asks you, what is your father's name? You're allowed to say, but even then it should be done in a respectful way, saying, Avi Mori, or my father is that way, but you don't stop and refer to him by a first name. In fact, this minhag, this halacha was taken so strongly that it became the source of the minhag. You know, we have all these Yiddish expressions, bubala, mamala, tatala, and you know, we kind of use them interchangeably just to refer to little kids. But you know, there's an origin for it, because bubala means little bubby. Tatala, little daddy. It came that when you would name a child after a deceased parent, for the kavod of the deceased parent, you would not call the child by that name. You'd say, little mother, little grandmother. It was, that's how deep the ideas of, now that's certainly beyond the halacha, because certainly I can call somebody else by the name of my parents. But nevertheless, this was the idea of Kibud Av V'Em. So basically we could say kavod are the affirmative acts that demonstrate affection. Yira is the sense of reverence. Another thing, you don't contradict a parent without a parent's permission. A parent says something, you don't say, no, Dad, that's the most idiotic thing I ever heard. That is an Isser D'Oraisa. And not only that, but the Gemara says that even if you agree with your parent, you know, there's some discussion, you shouldn't say, I agree, my father is correct. Because that implies, like, you know, he needs your agreement. Right? So that is called Mora. Now we'll discuss how this does this always apply and when doesn't it apply in a short way. But I want to make two preliminary points before we get into some of the halachas. One is, it's been well said that if you took a Jew from the shtetlach in Europe 100 years ago, 150 years ago, and just transposed him to a frum community, of course the technology would blow his mind, etc. But more or less, a lot of things would look roughly familiar. Shabbos, kashrus. No, we kept Shabbos in Europe, we keep Shabbos here. It says the one thing that would be the single most significant difference is the way people behave towards their parents, even in the most Haredi communities. He says in Europe, and you can see this among, you know, European people, in Europe there really was a sense of awe and reverence. You know, even if you were a Mechallel Shabbos, the concept that a Mechallel Shabbos would smoke a cigarette in front of their parents who were Shomer Shabbos was impossible. Now, in a way, you could say it's a taina. They had more fear of their parents than the Ribono Shel Olam. Okay. But be it as it may, you would never do anything that would be openly disrespectful of your parents' values. And today, that's kind of gone out of the window, even among very religious people very often. There's very rarely a sense of mora in that way. That's one aura. A second aura is a thought that was expressed by Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz once said that although the Gemara in Kedushin tells us that honoring your parents is done by external action, feeding them, giving them to drink, dressing them, taking them where they need to go, spending time with them, visiting them, that is called calling them on the phone, all of that is called kibbutz, right? That is how you honor them. But he says the shayrish of kibbutz comes from the word kaved. Now kaved means heavy, weighty, to regard your parents as significant. Even kavod abrios isn't external honor. It is looking at a person as having what we call gravitas, having weight, being significant. And Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, one does not fulfill the mitzvah of kibud, of the aim, until they have internally identified qualities within their parents that make them special and that are worthy of emulation. Now granted, in every human being, there may be positives or negatives, but a person should be able to say, to themselves at least, what is special about my father and mother? And until you've done that, you have not really fulfilled the attributes of kibud av v'aim. Now, the Gemara in Kedushin makes a very interesting observation. When it comes to the mitzvah of kibud, the Torah mentions the father before the mother. Kabeid es avicha v'yesimecha. When it comes to reverence, the Torah says, ish aviv v'imo tiro. It mentions father first, but mother is mentioned next to the verb. Right? So kavod, the Torah is madgish, the father. Mora, the Torah emphasizes the mother. And Rashi explains, based on Chazal, that kavod, which is love and affection, that tends to be more naturally given to the mother, who tends to be the softer person, although in some houses it changes that way. And therefore the Torah has to say, you must show kavod not only to your mother, but even to your father. Mora tends to be more associated with the father, and therefore the Torah says you must show mora to the mother as well as the father. Now, people ask a well-known question. In the Aseres HaDibros, a very common understanding is that the first five commandments are between man and God, Bein Adam Lamakom, and the last five commandments are Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, between man and man. So people ask the question, that, all right, the first four are indeed man to God. I am the God who took you out of Egypt. Thou shalt not have any other gods. Don't take my name in vain. Remember Shabbos. That's fine. The fifth is Kibud Av V'Aim. Now, Kibud Av V'Aim seems to be an interpersonal commandment. Excuse me. So why is it in the first five? It ought to be in the second five, which of course would make it four and six, but whatever. Kadosh Baruch Hu could have given us the 12 commandments, whatever it would be. So, the Baalei Mussar say some beautiful thoughts here. They say, number one, that when you feel gratitude towards your parents, and that's why you want to honor them, even if you felt the parents made a lot of mistakes, what you're really grateful for is they gave you life, they gave you existence. And by being grateful to your parents who gave you life, you will come to feel gratitude towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is the ultimate creator of life. So gratitude towards parents brings a person to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, because it gives you gratitude for the life that you were given. And therefore it is a stepping stone towards a relationship with God. In a more deeper psychological sense, the image that all of us form of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is based on significant part on the relationship we have with our parents. And sometimes we have to modify that based on negative experiences. If a person experiences a relationship with their father and mother that is based on love, security, safety, dependability, consistency, they can then generalize in their psyche that God is like the super parent. If chas v'shalom, a parent is unpredictable, abusive, volatile, temperamental, then we sometimes will have that image of God as being capricious. So in a sense, there's a remes here, not so much to the child who is given the mitzvah, but there's a remes to the parent, there's a message to the parents, that we put this mitzvah in the man God grouping, because in many ways the relationship that your child will have with Hashem depends on the relationship your child will have with you. And therefore, be a parent who is worthy of being honored. Now, the MS is, I am obligated to honor and revere my parent, even if they weren't very good, even if they gave me up at birth for adoption, and we'll talk about that, even if they were unkind. It may very well be that I have to minimize my contact with them, that's another thing, but I still cannot abuse them, and I have to be grateful for the life that they gave me. That's very true. But still, the halakha recognizes that a parent has an obligation not to behave in a way that will cause a child to be disrespectful. What is the source here? The source is a Gemara in Kedushin. The Gemara in Kedushin says that it is forbidden for a parent, the example it gives is to hit an adult child, because the child is likely to retaliate, and the parent is responsible for causing the child to sin by hitting the parent back. An amazing thing. I get hit because of the way I treated my child. I am responsible for the sin that child committed. And that is creating a very important generalization. That if I behave in ways that are likely to result in a child being disrespectful to me, it is his aveira to be sure, but it's also my aveira. It's lifnei iver. I caused the child to sin. So kibud aviyim does create parental responsibility and not just children responsibility. It creates a responsibility to be a person who is deserving of honor, a person who has earned that honor, a person who is worthy of respect. And we have to strive to do that so that we won't be machshel our children in being able to, unable to perform this mitzvah in a proper way. Now what's interesting is that there actually is no direct commandment in the Torah to love your parents. And to simply say, well, the Torah cannot command love, that's obviously not true. We are commanded to love every Jew. We are commanded to love God. Why are we not commanded to love our parents? There is no mitzvah to love your parents. But in a way, the Torah is teaching me a very profound lesson here. And that is, if the Torah would have said, love your parents, I might come to the feeling that if at any point in my life, because of our difficulties, I can't love them, I'm exempt. But by the Torah saying, honor and respect and revere, the Torah is saying, we don't really care what you feel. Even if you have feelings of anger, even if you have feelings of resentment, even if you have feelings they don't deserve it. The Torah is saying, on some basic operational levels, your feelings don't matter. Behave the right way, no matter what you feel. Now again, though, it is important to understand, and I'll get to this, that nobody is saying that if, God forbid, one has a parent that's abusive, you have to spend all of your time with them. Halacha recognizes the need to sometimes distance yourself from toxic and distressing and destructive relationships. Just as there is physical pikuach nefesh, if your life is in danger, you have to get away. There is a notion of psychic and psychological pikuach nefesh, where sometimes you have to get away. Halacha recognizes that. Now, I wouldn't tell you to make that decision yourself. One should talk to a rav in conjunction with a therapist and all of the social work, psychology, halacha insight that you need. But ultimately, sometimes amputation might be the only viable modality. But even when that is the case, that cannot be done with disrespect. It cannot be done with yelling, shouting, hateful words. The disengagement must be done in as respectful a way as is possible. I understand that that almost sounds contradictory. But sometimes, even if it is, you know, I'm sorry, mom and dad, or whatever, I can really not talk to you again, or at least until major, major changes take. But I do want you to know that I do this with a heavy heart, and I am grateful for the life that you gave me. We have our difficulties. I was advised we can no longer talk. If it comes, that's very extreme. But that's how it should be done. It can't be done by screaming, I hate you and you're awful and everything else. Because even when a relationship has to be terminated, the mitzvah of kibud and moreh is still going to be there. Now, there are a few basic principles that one needs to know in the mitzvah of kibud aviyim. First, there is a concept of mechila. Mechila means that although a parent is entitled to all sorts of honor, a parent can be mochel. A parent can say, "Don't." This is, for example, the common reason the Aruch HaShulchan writes why children commonly sit in their parents' chair, because you know mommy and daddy don't mind. It's brought down that the Chafetz Chaim's kids used to sit in his chair all the time, and it really didn't bother him in any particular way. This is why the custom has become that people don't stand up for their parents, because parents don't expect that type of honor. Now, halachically, mechila can certainly exist. It is entirely halachically permitted for a parent to be mochel on that honor. But let me emphasize that a child should not assume mechila, meaning to say the parent has to say, you know, I am mochel. But there are two limitations on mechila besides that. First of all, mechila can only apply to not showing them extra respect. There is no such thing as mechila on things that are disrespectful. So, for example, to call your parent by a first name, even if a parent says that's fine. If parent says, you can call me, let's say two siblings are fighting, let's say. So a parent says, hit me instead. Since hitting a parent is not simply a lack of respect, it is a bizayon, there is no mechila on something that is shameful and disgraceful. That's one thing to know. And the second thing to know is, and this is really a decision every family has to make, but Bali Musra have spoken about it. Maybe it's not such a great idea to be mochel legamri. When you're mochel legamri, children will never learn kibud and moreh. So it's been suggested, just as a suggestion, that children should be taught that when they see their parent the first thing in the morning, and they're sitting down, they do stand up when their parents come in. The rest of the day, be mochel. Not every time, in and out. But they should know, once a day, they stand for a parent. Meaning, one has to think, one shouldn't necessarily, casually be mochel. And if you think, well, I don't want to be a balgaiva, who am I to tell my children, whatever. As a parent, children need to learn the mitzvah of moreh and the like. Okay, so that's the idea of mechila. Now, a second important idea, and this is a big, big machlokas rishayim, and this will apply to adult children, and this is a major problem, is, does kibud aviyim apply to things that are not directly the parents' business? For example, kibud refers to give them food, give them drink, spend time with them, call them up, visit, take them to the doctor. But what about kibud aviyim on your own life decisions? I want to move somewhere. Can my parents say, don't move? I want to take a certain job. Or my parents say, put on your coat when you go outside. Because we know, and I know myself, I'm an Avelis, but Rav Kook said, when his mother was Nifteris, he said, now no one's going to tell me to put on my coat when it rains. So there is that. But am I mechuyev to put on my coat? Mother says, call your brother. In other words, there's a fundamental machlokas rishayim here. This is not so simple. There are some rishayim that say that the only time you have to listen to your parents' request is when it is a request that pertains to their physical and emotional needs. But if it's simply a request as to what you should do with your life, you can't argue with them, you can't say anything disparaging, but you are not mechuyev to do anything in your own personal life because your parents requested it. This is the shita of the Rashba, one of the Gedolei Rishayim, that say there is no obligation, there is no such thing as a kibud aviyim obligation regarding what job you take, where you live, who you call, who you talk to, who you spend time with other than them, because if there's no direct tanah to them, it is kind of not their business. Now, it doesn't mean you don't listen to their input, but there's no kibud aviyim trump card. The Chazanish, however, based on other Rishonim, did take another position. The Chazanish said that, generally speaking, you should try to do whatever your parents ask of you unless it creates an undue hardship. Now, it might. In many cases, there will be hardships involved, but if it's mabakach, they ask you to call your brother or call your uncle, The Chazon Ish actually says Kibud Evi Yom is mechayev you, simply because if you don't do it, you're causing them anguish, and that's a separate issur, that you know you don't cause your parents unnecessary anguish. But this is an important issue. One has to understand that Kibud Evi Yom for adult children is a different parameter than for little kids. Adults, halacha recognizes, do have their own lives, and as a result, they have to make a number of decisions. And there is no parental veto on every decision that a person makes. So this is a machlok. And on the other hand, the Chazon Ish is saying, unless you have a strong reason, though there actually is, you know, you do what your parents ask you to do, unless you have a very, very strong reason. Now, independent of this machlokas, however, there is a well-known rule that if what your parent is asking you to do is to violate halacha, you absolutely do not violate halacha, because you and your parents are both obligated to listen to God. A parent tells you to be mechalel Shabbos, a parent tells you to violate kashrus, etc. Kibud Av V'Aim certainly does not work if it's a transgression of a mitzvah. So, now you understand, this is independent from the machlokas, the Chazon Ish with the Rashba. Because the Rashba would take the position, even if it's not a mitzvah. If your parent asks you to do something that does not pertain to them, they have no power. The Chazon Ish says they do have that power, but we do know, according to everybody, if it's lavor ala Torah, you certainly won't listen to them. So in particular, the poskim have identified three areas where, according to all opinions, parental authority does not extend. Number one is choice of marriage partner. You want to marry somebody. Parents don't want you to marry them. Now, all of us want our parents' blessing, and all of us should listen to the experience and wisdom that our parents have, and all of us have to be respectful towards our parents, but ultimately, it is our decision, and parents have no koach whatsoever to tell a person who they should marry or not marry, and kibud aviyim doesn't apply. Now, the reason is, the reason for that would depend on the machlokas I just alluded to. According to the Rashba, it would simply be because kibud aviyim never applies to a life decision. According to the other opinions, it's because marriage is a mitzvah, and if your parents tell you not to marry the one that you want to marry, they are effectively telling you not to do the mitzvah in the way that you think is the best way to do the mitzvah, so you don't listen to your parents. Decision number two is Talmud Torah. A person wants to learn, a person even if he wants to go to a yeshiva, parents either tell him, we don't want you to go to yeshiva, or even if they want him to go to yeshiva, but they don't want him to go to that yeshiva, Kibud Av V'Aim is not an obligation. One decides where they should learn, from whom they should learn, what Torah they should learn. Once again, this doesn't mean you don't pay attention to the input of a parent, which may be very wise. What did Mark Twain say? When I was 17, I thought my parents were very foolish, and when I was 21, I was amazed how intelligent they got in only 4 years. And often we do find, in fact, we do appreciate sometimes much later the wisdom of our parents. Sometimes we find ourselves doing things as parents that as children we said we would never do. I said, no, no. Sometimes, you know, a parent behaves a certain way, I'm never going to do that. And we find in later years we have become our father and our mother in good ways, and maybe not always in good ways. But Talmud Torah, even the choice of yeshiva, there is no mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Aim. And the third instance is Aliyah, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now again, one cannot simply abandon their parents. One has to be sure that the parents are taken care of, and one has to be sure to maintain regular contact. But if a parent simply says, I don't want you to go, there is no parental veto. So this is the big three that all the posts can recognize, that Kibud Av V'Aim does not apply. Shiduchim, Talmud Torah, Yishuv, Eretz Yisrael. Let me point out, though, that the poskim say that although you are free to violate a parental directive, the parents don't have to pay. If you're going to a yeshiva or a seminary that the parents do not approve of, or you're marrying somebody that they don't want you to marry, well, do it on your own check, etc. They do not have to pay for any of that, but you are free to make your decision. Now again, please understand that when I say you're free to make your decision, that doesn't mean you should do it. Meaning, I'm not saying you should make Aliyah even if your parents want you to stay. All I'm saying is, halacha permits you to make aliyah over parental objection. Whether in any given case you should leave a parent depends a lot on the vulnerability of the parent, what they need, how much they would suffer. Those are very, very important questions, and sometimes the answer will be you will stay in Chutz Laretz. Sometimes the answer will be you will make Aliyah. Okay, be sure that you get this point very, very clearly. All the poskim are saying when they say that there's no kibud aviyim on Aliyah are simply saying the parent does not have an absolute veto to stop you from making your choice. That doesn't make the decision easier. That makes the decision harder. If there would be a veto, I would just be stuck. And if I could totally ignore my parents, I would just ignore them. Essentially, what the Torah is saying is, you have to weigh the individual circumstances, and there's not going to be a fixed answer. That makes it a more difficult question, not a less difficult question. All we're saying is, there's no automatic kibud aviyim, and that is based on the idea that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah, although that itself is a machlokas, but for this purpose we consider it to be a mitzvah, and kibud aviyim can never stop you from doing a mitzvah.
Are you saying that, let's say somebody is coming from Johannesburg, and they have an elderly parent there, and there's really nobody else to take care of them, and they would be in a community, let's say, where there wouldn't be any shidduchim available, that they have to stay in Johannesburg and take care of the elderly parent and not come to Israel?
Well, let me put it this way. They would have to be sure that somebody is taking care of the elderly parent. Yeah, absolutely so. If you're telling me a case, which is very rare, if you're telling me a case where nobody, I mean, it's very rare, but if your case is nobody can take care of the elderly parent, yeah, you would have to forego going to Israel.
And also getting a place that you might find a shidduch.
Well, you know, you're giving me a hypothetical, which is very extreme, but I can't imagine you'd ever be confronted with an extremity of that nature. But you cannot abandon a parent. That's very, now I understand that what abandonment means, sometimes parents think just you're moving is abandonment, but you have to ensure that basic needs are met. I'll discuss that in a moment. Until that's done, you cannot move. That's 100% true. Once it is done, then halacha gives you permission to make the decisions moving on with your life. One cannot abandon parents. Now, certainly, in 99% of the cases, parents have done so much for us, but even in the case where the parent might have abandoned you, strangely enough, you cannot abandon the parent. They did give you life. Now, a few more things here. Again, there's a lot of background to halacha, and that is, so on one hand, whenever a parent tells you to violate the halacha, you don't listen to them. What if they're just not religious? In other words, they're not telling you to violate halacha. Is there a mitzvah of kibud aviyim for non-observant parents? So, this is very interesting. The halacha does not use the term non-observant. It talks about rasha, an evil parent. This is a machlokas, the Rambam and the Tur. The Rambam says, the mitzvah of kibud aviyim applies even to a parent that is a rasha. The Torah says it does not apply to a parent that is a rasha. The Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Torah that you're not mechuyev to honor or revere a parent that is a rasha. The immediate question is, how do we translate the term rasha in today's contemporary society? So suffice it to say, without getting into all of the background, that most contemporary poskim have said that bizman hazeh, even if a parent is non-observant, non-religious, does not keep the commandments, they do not fall under the category of rasha. They fall under the category of what we call tinok shenishba. Tinok shenishba is a paradigm of a baby that was kidnapped and raised by the Gentiles. And we use that for someone who didn't have education, didn't have chinuch, didn't have background, didn't have exposure. They are not fully responsible for the way that they living their lives. So if you're asking me a general rule, do I have to have kibud aviyim for a parent that's not Shomer Shabbos? In the majority of cases, the answer is yes. However, the question is, can there be a category of rasha Well, the answer is yes. If somebody perhaps is a physical abuser, if somebody sexually abused children, we might come into the category of Russia, because even if you weren't raised religious, but these are basic moral ideas that virtually every civilized person understands is wrong. So there may be categories that do constitute rishus, even bisman hazeh. But again, it's a little tricky because these things overlap, meaning to say the following. Let's say, God forbid, a person had a parent that sexually abused them. I could describe the halachic consequence in two ways, which come out almost the same, but analytically they're two different pathways. One pathway would be, the father is a Rasha. And because he's a Rasha, according to the Ramah, there's no mitzvah of kibud av v'im. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is, there is a mitzvah of kibud av v'im, but because of the destructive impact on my life, I am permitted to amputate the relationship in a respectful way, and in a sense, I will be exempt from any active involvement in kibud av v'im because of the spiritual pikuach nefesh that I have to go through to preserve my own life. These are two different ways of describing it. One way of describing it is, I label the situation as a Russia situation, and that exempts me from the mitzvah. The other way is, there's still a mitzvah of kibud av v'im on some level, but I'm exempt from actively pursuing it because of spiritual pikuach nefesh. There are two different ways of characterizing it, and I think that would depend in a lot of, depends on what type of abuser is he, meaning to say the following. If he's an abuser who has no regret, no charata, then that could easily be classified as the Russia. If it's a person who genuinely regrets, but he feels he's not able to stop this destructive behavior, perhaps we would apply the second paradigm instead of the first. The common denominator is, though, you wind up largely in the same place of, I'm not going to have contact with him. And halacha will give you that result, whether you pursue the first way of describing it or the second way of describing it.
What if you could separate the two? He's a Russia, but not to you. There are people who are Russia.
Yes, you're correct. At that point, we would follow the Ramah. In other words, at that point, you don't have the spiritual pikuach nefesh argument, but you can distance yourself according to the Ramah because he's a Russia. But as I say, generally speaking, that type of rishus would have to be a violation of basic morality, as opposed to bein adam lamakom, where bizman hazeh we characterize most people as a tinok shenishba. Now the question is, though, is it true that all non-religious people are called tinok shenishba? I mean, what about religious people who went off the derech? So here we get into a tricky idea, and that is there such a thing as a psychological tinok shenishba? Meaning, even if somebody was raised religious, he or she may have such emotional turmoil that they're not fully responsible. That is a very, very tricky question. We tend to be very lenient. By the way, tinok shenishba doesn't only come up here. It comes up with yayin nesech. It comes up with all sorts of shilas. Who can you count for a minion? And people tend to pull out the tinok shenishba card very, very frequently. It's not so pashut that in every case tinok shenishba, but certainly the person that was raised conservative reform, we can call them a tinok shenishba for these purposes. Okay, now another issue is money. Money is always a big issue. The Gemara in Kedushin comes out l'maskana, and this is the halacha, that although you have a mitzvah to spend time with your parents, to serve your parents, to transport your parents, so you have to give them the commitment of time and effort, but the financial costs come out of the parents' pocket, not your pocket. So, to take a simple example, although I think it would be stingy to insist on this, if your parent says, go to the bakery, pick up some bagels, you say, okay, but where's the money? Meaning, you don't have to pay, it comes out of the parent's assets, except the halacha is, if they don't have the money, then you are mechuyev to do so. If they have the money, it comes out of them. And the post can even say that if they have the money and don't want to spend it, you're not responsible to give in to the request. Now again, for bagels, I would hope you would buy the bagels, but you know, if it's a major thing. And not only that, if they're relatively young and able to work and they don't want to work, you don't have a chiyuv to supply needs in that way. And even if they're owed money that they could collect and they don't collect, you're not mechiyuv. So, there was an interesting shaila, they say in the name of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, where a bacher had learned Kedushin, the Gemara in Kedushin that says, kibud aviyei, the expenses have to come out of the parents' pocket. So he says, my parents want me to come home for Pesach. But a train trip from Brisk to Warsaw is going to cost me a lot of money. So my position is, I don't have to go unless they pay. So Rav Chaim said, well, okay, you better start walking. Meaning, like this, you're mechuyev to visit your parents. If you want to go by train, that's because it's convenient for you. That's your convenience, that's your expense. Now, it turns out the following. I saw a psak by Rav Zilberstein, which is a pretty strict psak in many ways, and that is the issue of nursing home placements, right? Let's say parents reach a certain stage in their lives where they're no longer able to live alone. They cannot live without assistance. So the question is, do you have to take them in, nursing home, and the like? Now, obviously, in the perfect world, for a parent, for a child to be able to take care of a parent is a great, great, phenomenal mitzvah. There are people, maybe there are people in this room, who take care of parents, and sometimes for many, many years. And there's no end to the particular reward that is. But sometimes that's not feasible. Sometimes it's not good for the parent. It's not good for the parent because the parent may want to have a certain distance from children and have semi-autonomy, although a nursing home is not the best thing, but sometimes there's assisted living or independent living. Sometimes the parent has either emotional or physical needs that cannot be met in a home thing, in terms of medical care and the like. Sometimes it would be so destructive of shalom bayis. And shalom bayis does have priority over kibud aviyei. So under those circumstances, a nursing home placement or some type of independent living or assisted living is halachically appropriate and necessary because sometimes it is best for the parent. But even when it's not best for the parent, the undermining of shalom bayis may consider it to be a reasonable option. But this is what Rav Zilberstein says. This is at a very pretty amazing psak. And I don't think other person would agree with that, but I'll mention it. He says the following. If the caregiving nursing home placement is because that is a better way of the parent getting their needs, then the burden of that expense is on the parent's income because that is what is best for the parent if they have the money. But, this is his chiddush, if the decision to place them is because it would undermine your shalom bias and it's not good for you, then you're not spending the money out because of kibud aviyei. You're spending the money to avoid the difficulty of dealing with your parents. That comes out of your pocket. He compared that to the Rav Chaim story, where if because of my convenience I want to take a train instead of walking, the money that comes out of my pocket, not my parents. So that could be a very difficult decision here. In other words, basically, I'm just wondering if that gives parents a certain stranglehold. You know, you tell a parent, well, you know, it's be difficult to have you in our house. We want to suggest this. That, okay, sure. You just have to come up with the money. It's an interesting proposal and the like. So, but this is what Rav Zilberstein said. He was machalek, and it might be difficult to separate the two. He differentiated between a placement that is for the benefit of the parent versus a placement that is for the convenience or even the shalom bias of the child, in which case you'd have to bear the cost unless the parent wants. Now, if they want to, they're mocha, but you know, obviously. But if they don't want to, they could insist that if you want to place me, you got to pay the money. Again, I hope things don't get into that. I mean, obviously, when children and parents are talking that way, the relationship needs a lot of improvement, and hopefully it wouldn't come to that. But if they go in front of a beis din, this is how a beis din might resolve it. Yeah.
About the aspect of having to contradict your parent on the decision about
Okay, so let me explain something here. You have to understand what we mean. when we say you cannot contradict your parents, we don't mean you can't make a decision that contradicts your parent. Obviously, if my parent tells me, I want you to take this job and I take another job, I've contradicted my parent. Contradicting the parent is a way of speaking, not a way of acting. Contradicting parents means you don't say you're wrong. You don't say you're foolish. You say something like, I respect what you're saying. I'm sorry to say that I can't do that. That is not halachically contradicting. So it's important to understand that. Contradicting a parent does not refer to the decision that you make. It refers to the manner that you communicate your disagreement with the parent. So you are allowed to make that decision. Yeah.
My understanding is if a woman is married, she is absolved and then active, people of the age interferes.
Yes. It is absolutely the case that because Sholem Bayis is paramount, the woman is absolved of kibud av v'aim to the degree that it would interfere with the shalom bayis. Now, to the degree it does not interfere, then she is obligated. And the halacha basically says a husband cannot really tell his wife not to talk to her parents and the like, but a husband would have the right to say, don't bring the parents into the house. Now, there is a machlokas haposkim. How does that work the other way around? Meaning to say, the wife is absolved of kibud av v'aim if it interferes with shalom bayis because of the husband's objections. What about a husband being absolved from kibud av v'aim because it interferes with the wife and there's a lack of shalom bayis there? That is a machlokas. Some poskim say that since the Gemara says one must honor one's wife even more than they honor themselves, it's a kal v'chomer, if for the husband's honor, the wife is exempt, for the wife's honor, the husband is exempt. Others say it only works one way, and the wife has to be more accommodating. So there is a machlokas haposkim, how to apply that. But you are correct.
I actually didn't finish the question.
I'm sorry, yeah.
The question was, the topic tonight was about elderly parents.
Yep.
We know that very often they have a lot of needs.
Yep.
And there's a conflict between taking care of one's husband and her children and taking care of the elderly parents.
Yep.
When there's nobody else to take care of the elderly parents, how much is the child allowed to have an impact on their spouse and their children?
Yes. You know, this is an extraordinarily difficult question, and this is one of those areas where people have to work together, meaning to say, on one hand, you know, it's an impossible situation in the abstract because it is forbidden to abandon the basic needs of a parent. That is absolutely forbidden. And yet it is equally true that shalom bayis has precedence over kibud av v'aim. So in a situation where each side is standing firm in terms of their expectations, then by definition, nobody's going to be happy. You'd have to have a situation where the woman, usually it's the woman, is going to have to run back and forth and do both, and once again she'll go crazy, and her own spiritual and physical life, you know, can be shattered. What you need is, you need a situation where people work together, where parents need to understand the primacy of marriage. In other words, the elderly parents need to understand the importance of shalom bayis and the importance of a child and his or her spouse being able to build their lives. On the other hand, the spouse and the children need to understand the great mitzvah of kibud av v'aim and the reward that Hashem will give them for kibud av v'aim. And then you try to create an accommodation. People do it. If people talk to each other, if they're mentioned, if they're decent, if they're conscientious, they work out some type of situation. But without compromise and without pshara and without goodwill and without midos tovos, this is an impossible situation. And all I can tell you is, shalom bayis is ultimately more important, but it cannot be at the expense of basic needs. And if basic needs are going to compromise shalom bayis, then that will be the degree of compromising shalom bayis that will have to be necessary. But again, I have to say that in this area, halacha does not always give you a fixed, definite rule, because halacha presupposes that people communicate, people talk, and people work things out. And when you reach a point at which that becomes impossible, you are in an impossible situation. And that's very, very sad, very regrettable. I will say that halacha does permit delegation. So sometimes it might be that as a daughter, your eitzah would be, would cost money, to just have somebody else. Maybe it might be a friend who might do it without money, but have a friend get involved in the tipul. And, you know, you need other people to get involved. You can't do it. I know that our desire is to be the one who does it, both because that's the mitzvah, and because of ego as well, you know. We feel like a failure if we have to get other people to help out, but sometimes that is what has to be done. Yeah.
Ideally, my friend had this situation.
Yeah.
She got her kids involved. Each day a different kid had a Torah with her mother.
Yeah.
And her husband even climbed on board.
Yes. That's absolutely right. But the point is you need cooperation. Let me point out, by the way, that there is a mitzvah to honor your in-laws as well. It is not d'oraisa, but the same way that I must honor my parents, my wife must honor my parents, and I must honor her parents. Interestingly enough, they say, though, there's only a mitzvah d'rabbanan of kibud, not mora. So I can call my in-laws by their first name. In other words, I'm not mechayev to stand up for them. But kibud, I'm supposed to have. So in many ways, if a wife's mother is in trouble or she has needs, there is a mitzvah on the husband to be involved as well. The husband can't simply say, oh, it's your mitzvah and you're interfering with my shalom bias. Therefore, the husband himself has a certain amount. It's a much lesser obligation. But there's a certain amount of obligation he has to help the situation. Yeah.
Did you say that let's say a daughter-in-law is allowed to call her parents-in-law by their first name if they want?
Yes.
Or
that's what I did
not
say.
Not want.
Well.
I mean, let's say.
Listen, it's not listen. Obviously, it's not appropriate to call anybody by their first name if they tell you they don't want. I mean, that's Derech Eretz, but it wouldn't be a violation of Moreh. And at least they could be mokel. But I wouldn't recommend calling your in-laws by their first name if they don't want you to do that. Okay. Now let me just mention a few. Yeah.
If the parents don't have the financial means.
Yes.
And you have to support them financially, can you take it out of their mouth?
Okay. All right. So that's a very good question. So I mentioned before that if they have the money, they got to pay. If they don't have the money, you have to pay. Question is, does it come out of tzedaka? So that depends on you. The Gemara says, if you can afford supporting them without using your tzedakah money, it is a curse for you to treat your parents as objects of charity, and you must take it out of your own money. On the other hand, if it will be a financial hardship for you, you are permitted to use your tzedakah money. So that depends. In other words, if you're very wealthy and supporting your parents would not be difficult for you, you are not allowed to use your tzedakah money. If you're not very wealthy, then you're allowed to. Now, an interesting shaila is, do you have to use more than your miser? Meaning like this. Let's say a person earns $50,000 a year. Pardon me for using American money. So let's say your maser is $5,000. Your parents don't have money. Your parents need $10,000. So I said that you can use your tzedakah money to support your parents. But do I have to give them more than $5,000? That's a machlokas. That's not, again, a machlokas on poskim. Some poskim say that since you're using your tzedakah money, you're not mechuyev to use more money than your chiyev tzedakah, which caps out at maser. Others say that the obligation of parental support is as high as you can do without endangering your own financial stability. So even if you have to give them a third of your income, if you're able to survive with that, you do it. So that is a machlokas ha-poskim. But certainly if you can afford it, it is absolutely forbidden to use tzedakah money to support parents, because parents should not be treated as throwaway objects of charity. Yeah.
What happens if you have the sandwich generation?
Yes.
You have children who need your help as well.
And the question is, who has priority?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a good question. Now, obviously, if the children are young, they would have priority. That's considered to be shalom bias. If the children are adult children, parents would actually have priority. Parents have priority over adult children, even if the adult children are learning in kolel. That's exactly right. In the list of kedima for tzedakah, parents are the highest level of tzedakah at that level. Now, let me just mention a few issues about medical treatment of elderly parents. First of all, you know that there's an issur d'oraisa in the Torah of hitting a parent, and that transgression is triggered when you draw blood in particular, a black and blue mark, or drawing blood. Now obviously, somebody simply punches their parent, obviously, that is such a serious avera that the Torah says it is a capital crime, and at the time of the Beis Hamikdash, somebody could be put to death for that. But the issue arises about giving parents injections, you know, benign things. Bloodletting, when they used to do that, they don't do that so much that way. Let's say I'm a doctor, or I'm a nurse, or I'm a son or a child who's able to do things. Am I allowed to do medical procedures on a parent if they might involve the drawing of blood? This is a major, major discussion in Rishonim. I'll just give you the bottom line of the Ramah. The Ramah says that if there's somebody else who could do it, who is just as skillful or more so, it is better for a parent or her child not to do it. In fact, this is where if the other child could do it, although you have a problem of Nagia, etc., but get somebody else to do it. If there's nobody better, you're the best doctor or the best nurse, then you should do it. Now, this gets involved in an interesting machlokas. Well, what if my son, the doctor, will do it for free, but if I go to another doctor, you know, I'm going to have to pay. Is that considered having another or not? Some say that the father has the right to tell his son, I want you to do it for free. Others say that even if it would have to be paid for, that comes out of the father's money, and therefore the son can say, go to the doctor instead. But one has to be careful that any type of drawing blood does potentially involve a halachic shaila. That could be true for injections. That could be true even for removing a splinter. Now, it would appear, though, that let's say somebody stepped in glass, and removing the glass would cause bleeding, and you can get somebody else, but that would prolong the suffering, prolong the discomfort. You can treat that as nobody is available right now, and that would be a permissible thing to do. That's one issue. Now, another issue that comes up a lot is your parent asks you for something that is injurious to their health. Right? Dad asks you for a cigarette when they were ordered by the doctor not to smoke. Or they're diabetic and they ask you for a piece of chocolate or cake. Or driving is a very major issue. And perhaps some of you might have faced this. It is a very, you know, driving, okay, in Eretz Yisrael, you know, a lot of us get around with public transportation, but in America, you know, everybody has a car. And driving is symbolically very, very significant of independence, of autonomy, that I'm able to get around. And as a result, you know, people have driving, like, you know, people drive in their 90s and their 100s, you know, they drive around. Problem is, unfortunately, that sometimes the person can no longer really drive, and God forbid, they are not only a danger to themselves, but what's even worse perhaps is they could be in a danger to all sorts of people. At some point, a child may have to make the decision. Now, if the state doesn't renew the license, Baruch Hashem, that's pashut. But some, you know, sometimes there's automatic renewals, you know. You don't even go in, they just renew the license automatically. At some point, a child has to take the keys. But it has to be done in a very, very respectful way. Sometimes there's a transition where you'll let the parent drive and you'll be in the car with them. It's very, but where it gets very murky is that often there's this area where they can still drive, but their reaction time isn't so good. You know, the issue is independence is very, very important. The Gemara even says, the Gemara gives a case of two children. One child gives his parent the richest, fanciest pheasant and will go to Gehenna. And the other child makes his father work at pulling a millstone and he will go to Gan Eden. And the Gemara gives the case where a child, a very rich child, took in his parents, and when it was time to eat, the kid just threw the food to the parents saying, eat! You know, disrespectful, communicating that you're a nobody. And the other made his parent work to give the parent a sense of self-sufficiency. So the attitude is very important. The notion of giving people independence, giving people respect. So one of the difficult balances, anyone that has an elderly parent knows this, is that people will be making decisions that are not best for them. They're not living in the best way. Their house is not as clean as it should be. They're not eating as healthy as they would be. But for you to intervene would take away their sense of respect, independence, and being in charge of their life. So on one hand, again, this is another example of these very difficult questions. When it really crosses over the border and becomes dangerous, you gotta step in. You gotta preserve their physical life. On the other hand, if it's not so great, it could be better. But if I make it better, it'll be at the expense of their autonomy and control over their lives. Then sometimes the trade-off is, okay, they're not doing the best that they could do, but this way, you know, they're making the decisions. So when do you cross that line is going to be a difficult question. So many poskim say like this. Many poskim say, let's apply this to the chocolate case. The diabetic wants the chocolate. Well, or the person wants a cigarette. It depends. You know, if one piece of chocolate is not going to trigger some diabetic reaction, even though in the long run it's not a good thing, give it to them. If, on the other hand, they'd go into diabetic shock immediately, you know, don't. In other words, basically, it all depends on whether this particular thing is going to be a real, real danger, or it's just a long-term habit that shouldn't be perpetuated, but as an isolated instance, you know, you can allow it. One has to make that decision. I think we're going to have to carry this over to part two. There's a lot more material that we need to discuss. You know, I'll just end with the old Yiddish saying of, it's a funny thing that one parent can manage to take care of 10 children, but somehow 10 children find it difficult to take care of one parent. But you know, they say Kabbalistically there's an explanation for this. Because the very first human being, Adam and Chava, they had children, but they didn't have parents. So parental love, the love of a parent for a child, is in the very beginning of creation. The love of a child for a parent didn't come until the second generation. And as a result, it is not as deeply embedded in the framework of creation. But I hope, nevertheless, that if we do still have the privilege of having our parents, we will feel hakara tatov and try to do what we can to pay them for all that they did for us and all that they continue to do for us. And Be'ezras Hashem, this mitzvah should give us in Klal Yisrael Arichus Yamim, and may our sensitivity be chus for Klal Yisrael and for Eretz Yisrael. So.